On this episode of the BYO Nano Podcast, events are a great way to bring regulars and new customers into your taproom. We'll talk with three brewers who are working to bring new and exciting experiences into their breweries and who offer advice that can work for your nano operation. This is John Hall. Welcome to episode 51. And a quick word on content. This show is for nano brewers, both existing and in planning. So tell us what you want to hear. What are the topics that you want to learn more about? And what issues are you interested in? And who are the brewers you want to hear from? Email us. It's nano@byo.com. And also, a word of thanks to the show's sponsor, and we hope you'll give them a closer look. Get access to hundreds of hours of on-demand videos covering small craft brewery strategies with BYO's Nano Plus membership. Learn from craft beer experts, watching replays of past NanoCon seminars, plus a complete library of in-depth workshops. You'll also have full online access to all of BYO's digital content and an annual print magazine subscription. Check out byo.com/nanoplus for more details. And now, on to the show. From celebrations to new events to yoga, live music, crafts, and working with charities, events are commonplace again, 4 years since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. What works, what doesn't, and how can nano breweries reach new customers while keeping the existing ones? Well, my guests today are a trio of brewers who are bringing events to their tap rooms that capture the imaginations of guests and tap into creativity. Brian Kulbacki is a 2012 graduate of the American Brewers Guild Brewing School, where he took their intensive brewing science and engineering course for breweries and planning. Prior to that, he graduated from Boston College with a double major in marketing and finance. He's worked in marketing for the New England Patriots / Revolution and the Lakewood Blue Claws, as well as finance for Major League Baseball and Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines. He's also managed operations for a family business. He founded Departed Souls Brewing Company in 2014, which in 2015 opened its doors to become the first brewery in Jersey City, New Jersey since Prohibition, and the first brewery on the East Coast to craft gluten-free beer in dedicated equipment along with traditional beers. The brewery has won medals at GABF, the World Beer Cup, the Best of Craft Beer Awards, and more. And the brewery is now run by Brian's dog, Bogan. Greg Fagan is co-founder of Heroes Brewing Company in Rochester, New York. As an avid home brewer, Greg honed his skills and passion for craft beer. He won 10 medals as an amateur while teaming with fellow beer creators in their garages. Heroes Brewing Company opened in December 2020 after a long 6-year pilgrimage to make the dream of owning a commercial brewery come true. Heroes is unique in that they partner with local charities and nonprofit organizations for every beer they make, and they make a donation to them from the sale of canned products. To date, Heroes has partnered with over 80 organizations who have benefited from the sale of more than 50,000 cans. Their philosophy is simple. Heroes don't look like they used to. They look like you do. And Stephen Fuller has been the owner of Wackadoo Brewing in Colorado for the last 4 years. He joined the Army at 17 years old and spent 14 years as an active duty infantryman and 5 years as a sniper. He completed 3 tours in Iraq, was a drill sergeant for 3 years, and now says his brewery is the only one in America to be part of a VFW. That would be VFW 6461 in Fountain, Colorado. The brewery also donates 100% of its profits every month to 11 different veteran nonprofits or veteran service organizations. And before we begin, a word about this conversation. This episode specifically talks about self-harm experiences and prevention. If you're having thoughts of suicide, call or text 988 to reach the lifeline. Additionally, in the United States, you can visit speakingofsuicide.com/resources for a list of services. Individual countries also have their own resources. It's okay to not be okay, and you're not alone. All three of the brewers joined me via Zoom. Welcome to all three of you, and thanks for being on the show this month. Stephen, I feel like I have to start with you because Wackadoo is not a common brewing name, or it's one of the more unusual ones, I guess I'll say, that I've come across in recent years. Can you give us a little bit of background on the brewery, the name, and what you all are doing out there in Colorado.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a little different. I mean, just starting with the name. So 4 years ago, I started the brewery 6 days before COVID, not realizing what was about to happen. And I was dating a girl from the Midwest, and anything that's crazy, weird, or different, she would call wackadoo. So she was calling me wackadoo all the time, or that things were being wackadoo. And so when I started the brewery, I looked online and there was no wackadoo companies anywhere. And I was like, well, this is perfect. I don't have to fight for a name. It's definitely different. And I've been blown up a bunch of times, so I'm a little off. So everything I do, everything I brew is all a little weird. And so the name just kind of fits. And now everybody walks in the door. They're like, yep. Yeah, this is wackadoo.
I like that it fits. Greg, can you give us a little bit of background on your brewery?
Yeah, so much like Steven's story, I purchased an existing brewery 2 weeks before the world closed with the pandemic. And we had been working on this for about 6 years. And we had thought of we were going to name it after our dog and all these things. And one of the things I had mentioned to my partner at the time is we were having dinner and I asked her, I said, what is it that anyone can be? And she looked back, I said, anyone can be a hero. So we looked, the name was available. And we knew at that time that the world really didn't need another brewery. So we had to figure out how we were going to be different. So we came up with two things. One was we had to have a purpose. So our purpose is to shine a light on the hero in the shadows. So grandparents raising grandchildren, people who adopt pets, people who spend their Saturday cleaning their town. And two, it had to be about the community. So every beer we make, we partner with a local nonprofit or charity. And a dollar per four pack that we sell goes to them. And even though we opened in the pandemic, we've partnered with over 80 organizations and sold about 50,000 cans of beer for charity.
Wow, that's incredible. Brian, I know your brewery. I've been there more times than not. But I always feel that when I say Departed Souls, I have to spell out S-O-L-E-S. So for those who are unaware, what's that?
I said, I still have to do it. It's confusing.
The only brewer on this show who did not open during the pandemic, but has survived other hardships in addition to a pandemic, most notably being in the Great Garden State. tell us about Departed Souls.
I started our brewery back in 2014. I signed our lease in a sort of like the last bastion of downtown Jersey City that wasn't getting developed at the time, and very quickly after that, a couple companies pretty much bought up every block around us, and the city has changed dramatically throughout that time. I started Departed Souls, or the idea of Departed Souls came back in 2010 when I moved back to New Jersey from Miami. I was already kind of into craft beer scene, already at home brewing, spent some time in Boston doing all that beer scene up there. And when I moved back to New Jersey, my best friend was diagnosed with celiac disease. And very quickly, we realized our Saturdays and Sundays that were spent, you know, bar hopping or tailgating or visiting local breweries, which there were only about 10 at the time in New Jersey. You know, that quickly changed because the only gluten-free beer on the market was made by AB InBev, and it was not really palatable. So we started kind of what we called market research nights, where we would get a six pack of whatever gluten-free beer we could find and a handle of Jack Daniels to wash it down with. And, you know, we kind of talked about my love of brewing and craft beer and his love of craft beer. And he had a lot of restaurant experience, although he was a full-time teacher, and kind of decided that maybe we should combine our passions and try and do something to make sure that craft beer can be in the lives of folks with celiac disease. Unfortunately, he passed away later on that year in 2010. I kind of trifled about life for a little while. And finally, my parents pulled me aside and basically said, you know, it sucks, but you got to get your shit together. And was homebrewing a couple weeks later with a buddy. And he kind of convinced me that I should chase the dream and maybe go back to school for it, you know, just cut out the restaurant aspect since I have terrible taste in food. I'm mostly a chicken fingers guy. And yeah, so that's what I did. I found out American Brewers Guild Brewing School up in Vermont. They had a 2-year wait list to go into the program, which I figured bought me a little bit more time of messing around and Steve Parks called me up a week later and said, hey, you start in a month. And the rest is kind of history. We didn't open up fully gluten-free, but it's now the vast majority of our production. We're down here in Jersey City. We have six fermenters and we have a good time with it.
So what's interesting to me about all three of you is with Greg and Steven opening up or taking over at the beginning of shutdown. And we're recording this on the 13th of March, which it's the fourth anniversary here of the pandemic being declared and when lockdown started in New York, New Jersey, where Brian and I are located, both shut down pretty severely, pretty quickly. And then Brian, in your case with New Jersey, event wise being limited up until recently as to what you all can do. You all just in the last couple of years, have really been able to create event programs and special things, as opposed to some brewers that have been around for forever who had to stop during the pandemic, and then restart things. You all had different worries at the beginning. When, Greg, did you all start thinking about, or when, at what point, I guess, during the pandemic, when things started to ease up a little bit, did you first start to think about, okay, like we can have people in, what do we want to do to get people in? As opposed to just, coming in and drinking beer and for a good cause.
Yeah, you know, what made us unique is the fact that with every beer, we partnered with a charity. So in the very beginning, it was curbside pickup. And we would do social media campaigns. We would do campaigns where people could order it online. We would bring it to their car. But what really saved us in those early days was the fact that we didn't have to just rely on our social reach. We could rely on the social reach of the charities that we were partnering with. So it expanded who we could get out and respond to what we were doing. And then once things opened up, we transitioned from the virtual curbside events to hosting beer launch parties. So when we would release a beer, the charity would reach out to all their followers, and then we would host an event at our tap room, so that people could come in, buy the beer, socialize, do what they wanted to do. And then we moved it into things like guest bartenders. So they got some competitiveness going and invite their friends and who gets the most cash tips raised. And we just tried to keep it as a, following the rules as they were changing essentially week to week. But as things opened up, we just opened it up to doing more of that launch release type of an event.
And I want to talk about launch releases in a little bit, but Steven, same question to you though, on, thinking about getting people in the door when you were able to start getting people in through the door, with the wackadoo, vibe, I guess, in mind, where were your early thoughts on what you wanted to have happening inside of your four walls, aside from just people drinking beer and enjoying it?
Well, we got kind of lucky in that aspect. At the time, I thought it was a terrible thing and we were never really going to get anywhere. But looking back on it now, it was actually, sadly, probably the best thing that happened to us, is because when I first started the brewery, we couldn't get a building. I couldn't get loans. I couldn't get anything. So I sold everything I owned and I went down to the VFW here in town, where I'm a lifetime member. And I pitched the idea to them. They had a little 600 square foot shack, literally a shack, no power, no water. Behind their main building they use. And I said, hey, look, I need to get this brewery going. We need to start at least getting everything up and running. Can I use this little building you've got in back? And then I'll simply supply you with the beer and you are my tap room. So the VFW was making the money off the beer. And in exchange, they were letting me use the building for free. And that's how we actually got started, just down there on a little propane one barrel burner system. And I was running, everything off of extension cords and water lines. And because we were at the VFW, thankfully, most city bureaucracy does not like to mess with the VFW. They do not want to piss off a bunch of veterans.
Sure.
So we got the whole place up and running in like 3 months. It was amazing. They just like pushed everything through for us. And so we started there, and I had two taps on down at the VFW, and we still do. We still work with them. But that gave me the start. So I wasn't bringing in any revenue. I'd sold, I mean, literally, all I own, 4 years later, all I own is my clothes and my laptop and my motorcycle. And that's all I own. But we started there. And because it was the VFW, you know, there's a lot of folks there with health conditions and medical conditions. And so if you had a medical condition that prevented you from wearing a mask, nobody was allowed to tell you to wear a mask. And it was the VFW, so nobody really cared. And so we kind of, quietly and carefully pushed through that. And we ran off of the VFW's events, like their bingo nights, their karaoke nights, things like that. And that's how we survived that first 2.5 years, because I had almost no overhead because, you know, I was doing it for free, basically. And it got our name out there slowly and carefully. And then we started selling kegs to other places, other tap rooms as they were opening back up. And then after 2.5 years, when we finally moved up here to our Colorado Springs location, so it's the next town over, and now we have our own place and we're doing our own thing. But that's where we started from. And so we survived COVID by kind of hiding under the VFW.
I like
I'm gonna,
that. I
mean, if I ever expand, I'm gonna borrow that role model.
So Brian, you're in that unique position where for a long time, the state ABC, Alcoholic Beverage Control in New Jersey, was limiting the amount of events that breweries could do, and was also limiting a lot of what you could do within your walls. You couldn't air live sports without a permit, no TVs, no outside food, not even a cup of coffee. You know, there's all these various things. You did events early on because you were able to do, what was it, 25, as long as they're registered with the state in advance. And you've done book fairs and you've done, cool hangout nights. But recently the laws were loosened and folks were able to, breweries in the state were able to start doing events again. What impressed me was after these rules went into effect, I think on a Monday, on a Friday, you spent like the following Sunday closed down, redoing your bar, installing televisions, redoing the layout to really embrace the possibility of more events coming through. I feel that, I hope that's accurate or mostly accurate.
Fairly accurate.
But what were you most excited about event-wise?
When we first opened in 2015, you know, there was sort of like a gray area of what you were and weren't allowed to do. And the ABC kind of gave everybody free rein at the time because there were so few of us, quite frankly, and nobody was going crazy. It was all about the beer at that time, to borrow your namesake. And, you know, very quickly, though, people realized the beer, and as the market grew and got more saturated with options that were fairly similar, you had to start, your tasting room had to thrive in order for you to survive, even either just stand a chance at breaking even. So we had tried at the very beginning to do some little things here or there, but we run a very small team. You know, I only have 4 full-time employees here. So the ability to really do crazy events was always kind of hamstrung by that and our location, our lack of parking. All these factors, and I think it was somewhere around 2019 that ABC tried to put these rules in place and was immediately hit with, you know, the same adverse reaction that they got this time around, and they sort of backed off, and COVID happened, and it didn't really matter at that point because there was no tasting rooms open for people to do stuff in. And I don't know about for Greg or Steven, but at least here in our market, it really doesn't feel like, despite the restrictions being gone, the hospitality industry is back in full force. We still see bars and restaurants and other breweries and other distilleries shutting down fairly regularly, you know, despite the pleas to support local, buy local, shop local, that every bar and restaurant were doing during COVID. You know, they've kind of fallen back on the mass produced beers or the distributor beers since COVID. And so the struggle's been real. And we were kind of at a point where our lease was due for renewal, and looking at the timelines of, you know, are we going to even stay in New Jersey? Or are we going to pack up and move somewhere else if these laws don't change? And we're kind of right at that 2-year mark crux that it takes to sort of get the licensing all in place. And fortunately, the state passed this law, and Grant, my tasting room manager, and I just kind of looked at each other and said, there's 7 days a week. We need 7 events a week. What are we going to do? How are we going to embrace it? How are we going to compete with the other 162 bars and restaurants in Jersey City for dollars? And we shut down on Sunday at 7 o'clock. We worked through the night. We weren't allowed a sit down bar, even technically speaking, by the letter of the law up until that rule passing. So, you know, now we have 13 seats at our bar. We have a handicap accessible bar. We have 4 more TVs that we can show games on. We have live music now every night. We're trying to do more release parties. We're doing a jazz night, partnering with much to like what Heroes does, you know, partnering with charities and getting them in here. You know, just kind of hitting the ground running, despite being hamstrung by, you know, 0 parking spaces for people and, you know, being a small brewery, having a small tasting room. So there's only so much you can do. Very jealous of all the people with big tasting rooms and beautiful outdoor spaces and parking lots that they can really throw down in. But, you know, we just got to be creative and take advantage of the space that we got.
I want to back up a little bit and Steve and Greg, jump ball for you of Brian talking about just the hardships that the hospitality industry is going through right now. And each of you being in the areas that you are you starting to feel that squeeze, or maybe not even starting, but continuing to, or is what Brian's saying a little bit of a foreign concept?
Oh no, I almost Steven, jumped in on that. So in Colorado at the, in 2022, 38 breweries closed. And this last year, 2023, 25 more closed. We've definitely seen it. Even here in town, we had two. One of them was a 15-year-old brewery that just closed down to be January last year. And then another one that had been open for almost 9 years closed down in June here in my town. And we've definitely felt it. I think the biggest advantage I have over most of them is the fact that one is I don't care. The more people tell me I can't do something, the harder I'm going to do it. And two, that we survived. Yeah, I mean, we opened right into COVID and it was absolutely terrible for the first 2.5 years. So now it's actually very easy, no matter how much of a squeeze there is, like CO2 costs have gone up, delivery fees have gone up, grain costs, all these prices on everything are going up. But for us, it's actually it's easier because of how bad it was. So for me, as bad as it is right now, it's still better than it was when I started.
Greg, how about
the grass wasn't much greener on the other side of COVID either, I promise you.
Yeah, I would echo what Steven just said is, you know, it's having opened as we both did in essentially a shitstorm, right? We don't know what the calmer waters, if they actually existed. And Brian kind of just said that they really weren't that calm pre-COVID. But we're seeing the same churn that Steven was just mentioning, a local brewery in the city of Rochester where I'm at, whose 10-year, 12-year-old brewery, they closed. I have 5 other breweries within a half mile of me in the city of Rochester. We're very prolific with breweries, so there's a lot of competition. We're very lucky in where we are in that we have Genesee Brewery in Rochester, mm-hmm. and they've been here forever. And they have a very sophisticated lab, and they have opened that lab free of charge to every craft brewer in the area to have their beer tested, to have consultations so that we can try to maintain very high quality standards. So there's lots of great beer around, so that, you know, helps the consumer. Doesn't necessarily help every competitor because, you know, everyone's got a great beer. But it's also, we have to take into consideration that the world has changed since COVID. Our culture, I think, has essentially been recoded. People still stand 6 feet apart at a line at a pharmacy. Now we've got inflationary pressures on the consumer. So they're making decisions. Do I buy groceries? Do I buy craft beer? Do I put gas in my car? Do I go on a vacation as opposed to staying locally, right? So we're now in Rochester and in New York, we have legal cannabis, right? So all these other factors now that would get amplified that we now face as headwinds. And so, yeah, we're seeing closures. We're seeing restaurants doing the same type of thing. And we have a farmer who picks up our spent grain when we brew. And he's telling me that he's going to breweries now that he said, you know, I haven't been to this one in a month. That means they haven't brewed in a month.
Yeah.
And they were brewing weekly, right? So people are brewing less because there's less demand. They don't want to have inventory.
Yeah. And that's universal. I've heard that now for the last couple of years in talking with brewers and bar owners. I remember talking with Michael Roper from the Hop Leaf in Chicago, who was talking about how Last Call is coming earlier at his bar than ever before, because people aren't just, they're just not staying out as late as they used to. You know, it's the 2 a.m. Last Call isn't what it used to be. It's about 11 o'clock now, and people got used to the comforts of their own home, of having Netflix, having edibles, having you know, good beer that they can have in their own fridge and not necessarily being at a crowded space. That said, I feel like it is still the human experience of getting people out and wanting to be together in a social space, you know, even if it's once a week or once a month or whatever it is. And Stephen and Greg, it sounds like you both have built good, strong communities with the charities that you're working with the VFW. Brian, I mean, I know you're a neighborhood hangout for folks in that part of Jersey City as well. What have you found, Stephen, event-wise, recently that has gotten new people through your door?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we tried, like everybody else in town, you know, we tried trivia nights, we tried Teacher Tuesdays, things like that. And none of those worked because, I mean, you got more well-established larger breweries than myself and they nail those. So we gave up from that and we were like, okay, what do we do that's unique, that's different, that's, you know, crazy and wackadoo. One of the things was we offer a belly dancing class on Tuesday nights. One of my staff here is an amazing belly dancer.
I pay to see John take that class.
I can hear Brian furiously writing notes down right
yeah,
now.
Right. Yeah, I'm in.
Oh, she is absolutely
calling
amazing.
Brandt.
She's been teaching it for about 8-9 years on one of the Air Force Academy, one of the military bases here, because she's a military spouse. And she was actually going to college for it. And she was teaching it out of her house for a little while. And then her and her husband moved into a smaller home because prices here are getting stupid. And she was like, hey, you know, would it be all right if like, me and a few other people just hung out and did a little belly dancing in the corner of the brewery? And I was like, man, I think that'd be awesome. And then that has turned into a full blown Tuesday night class, dedicated people that come in every week. The ladies come in there and belly dance. The husbands and boyfriends come in here to support them. And other people come in just because it's very different and they just want to watch and it's cool. And now Tuesday night, which was our worst night of the week, has become our second best day of the week because of that. And nobody else offers anything like it. And once every couple of months, we do a big, what's called a hafla party, which is all Middle Eastern food. They do put on a big show. And then that's a huge event for us now because nobody in the area offers it. And so many of these ladies wanted something to do because, you know, most breweries is, you know, guys nights out doing stupid things. And, you know, you get female customers too, but there's like nothing specifically pinpointed to the ladies. And they absolutely love it. And so that's been a huge turn up for us.
Great. Greg, what about with you? Aside from, you know, from the charities and everything, has there been something that has hit recently for you that surprised you, that brought new people through the doors?
You know, we do music and we've brought in some different artists. And one of the things that seemed to gather a lot of feedback is there would be some established artists who obviously there's up and coming people that nobody has heard before. And we did something called Songwriters in the Round, where we have two established artists who are the hosts and they invite people from the music community to come in who maybe this is their first gig, or they've just written a few songs they want to play for people. And they sort of tell the story of the song and they play it. And we make an evening of that. And that seems to have attracted a lot of people because it's they're getting exposure to somebody new, somebody maybe they haven't heard. But we've, you know, we tried trivia. We've tried painting events. We've tried craft fairs. The craft fairs seem to be a nice draw. We do that in November. So it's kind of a pre-holiday thing. And we've got a lot of our Mug Club members who do crafting as a hobby. So they set up tables in our tasting room and they advertise on their social. So that does bring people in. which then we sell beer and we sell food and other things. But it's, it's also kind of hit or miss. We saw with trivia, for example, and I went and experienced it at other places that we were considering as hosts. And after a couple of weeks, I was seeing the same faces. So it wasn't necessarily bringing new people in. It was just, it brought in a core, and then the core just stayed the core.
And if a core is buying beers, then it's boosting the coffers. That's great. But it does seem that if you're putting the time, the energy in, if you are going to have, butts in seats, that you want it to have a fresh feeling, in addition to just the same old, same old.
And we don't have room for like cornhole leagues or things like that. We're in a cityscape. We have a parking lot for our outdoor space, so we're kind of limited with those types of things.
Brian, you spent some time, I mean, Jersey City, as much as it is, could be considered one of the boroughs of New York City, although it's New Jersey and it shouldn't be because it stands on its own. But
People would get very mad at you.
no, I don't mean it in that
Were
way.
you
It's
run out of town, or did you choose to move out of town?
But what the point that I was trying to get at, I guess poorly, is that at least when I lived there, it did have a great community feel. It was, Jersey City against the world kind of thing. And, we had our own bookshops and we had great pizzerias and we have, all of these things that you didn't really have to leave the confines of Jersey City to experience, world-class dining, arts, music, et cetera. And that community aspect is something that you've always sort of tapped into. When you've done your book events, you've worked with the local bookseller, you've worked with, the local pizzeria, you've worked with, all of these businesses. When you've had those relationships for events, for collaborations, but specifically events in the past, have you been introduced, or have people been introduced to you for the first time? And then how have you cultivated those relationships to long-term customers, bringing them back in for other events?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of goes to say, even towards not just my events, but even how we do a lot of our collaboration beers here. I kind of try and look at it, even though it's a community thing, more on a macro level. And rather than just saying, hey, we're two brewers, let's get together and drink beers and make a beer, I kind of look at it as the Venn diagram of demographics and say, all right, band A or company A or restaurant A. They cater to this market, we cater to a different market, but they kind of overlap in terms of interests or ideas or flavors. And we try and pick those partnerships to work with. A lot of the stuff we do in our brewery, we're themed towards sort of a pop punk emo and sort of babies of the 80s theme. But at the end of the day, babies of the 80s have been drinking for 20 years at this point, and we need to make sure that the kids that were born in the 2000s, which sounds crazy to say, that we're also appealing to them, the kids from the 90s, the people from the 70s or 60s. There's a whole big world out there that we can't just stick to our core theme to attract, or our core ideas to attract. And so a huge part of what I try and do is find those opportunities outside of our four walls that, like I said, we have an event space. At the end of the day, we're a tasting room that sells beer, but for the vast majority of the day, three quarters of our space is unused. So we basically put it out there to other people, not our staff even, and say, hey, like, you got an idea, you want to run an event, we got space and we're not going to charge you for it. All we ask is that you buy some beer while you're here. So we do an open mic night every other Wednesday now that we don't run. Some kid was looking for a place to run it, and every week we get 3 hours of live music for everybody for free. We do a swing dancing class, we do a bar class, we do a yoga class. We have two different groups that meet here to for creative ideas for creative writing, Dungeons and Dragons. It's basically like, hey, whatever, Tuesday's a slow day, Wednesday's a slow day. Why don't you come in and use our space and hang out and do your thing, play your game? And a lot of people have really embraced that. Does everybody drink? No, but you kind of rely on them for their social media posts, or telling their friend that they're going to be here, or their significant other to maybe meet them here afterwards. You know, we have a running group on Mondays, every Monday, rain or shine. They get upwards of 40, 50 people, and I'd say only a handful of them stay for a beer afterwards, but at least we're top of mind then when the weekend rolls around and they are thinking of somewhere to go.
Yeah.
So for something that doesn't cost us a dollar, it's just sort of that. I don't know if Greg or Steven have an opinion, but I think it's hard to market these days. I don't think it just a social media post works anymore. A billboard doesn't work so much anymore. Advertising on mass transit costs tens of thousands of dollars. You know, it's people skip over your TV ads. So you got to rely on your guests to market for you. And I think these events are sort of the Trojan horse into that.
Greg, I saw you were about to jump in there. Is it hard to market these days?
It is, right? It's very hard to not stand out from the Me Too of beers, the beer scene or whatever, right? Everyone's doing the same type of things. We're all at the same festivals. We're all doing running groups. We're all doing all these things. But you're right. If we have those ambassadors that share their experience and go out into the world and bring other people in, that's really where we try to focus now. Is sure, we'll do some Instagram and we'll do Facebook. Now we're trying to turn that focus to, when that person comes in the door, how do we make what they experience different than what they're experiencing somewhere else, so that it's even more memorable and they share to even more people?
Yeah. Steven, what about you? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, we tried doing some advertising, and we found that there was almost no difference when you're dumping money into it or you're not. It's the people coming in here and then going out and telling their friends. Word of mouth is everything, especially here. I mean, we have 35 breweries here in town, and it's like, what do you do to stand out or stand aside? Mm-hmm. And that's the nice thing, is like a lot of us will work together. A lot of the breweries here in town, we all know each other. We all do things together, but it'll be, hey, you know, if you go out to this brewery tonight, or, you know, then they'll turn around and send somebody to us, you know, and showing your face at that other brewery, and they'd be like, oh, hey, I know you, you're over at Wackadoo. And I got these little like free beer tokens that we do with our Wackadoo logo and everything on there, you know, and I'll go around town and I'll just start talking to people, and I'll hand them one of the coins, and then they'll come in and they'll bring friends, and they'll spend, you know, they'll buy four or five beers. And then that one token, you got one beer that turned into five or six more sales. And getting people in here, like, we offer something crazy. So I've got what we call the Squadron. It is the largest flight board in the entire state, mm-hmm. at the lowest price in the entire state. People love taking pictures with it, so that we can be like, oh, we had, you know, the largest flight in all of Colorado, because we do.
Wait,
all
I got to ask, how many beers in the flight?
So 20.
Oh, awesome.
So I've got 20 beers on tap.
Well, I'm going to have 21 in mind starting tonight.
There you go. Yeah, but that's the great thing. Like, people, they see that and they're like, oh my God, what is this? Because we keep it up on the bar top, you know, over by the register. So everybody walks up, they ask about it. And then you explain it. And if they've got a group of like three or four, that's real easy for them to do 24-ounce pours. And then they want to take a picture of it and they post it all over their social media. Hey, we just had the largest flight board in the entire state. Boom, come down to Wackadoo. And that's really helped out. I mean, we only sell like maybe four or five a week. But the point is, almost everyone that drinks that takes pictures, posts it all over their social media.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
You know, I think about it, like, to your point, Stephen, like when I get out of the brewery, when I actually get to go visit a new town, like, am I looking up Yelp at this point for a restaurant or something like that? It's like, no, half the time my fiance is being like, oh, this place looked really cool, or I saw this video on TikTok. It's like,
yep.
And nine times out of 10, those videos and those pictures aren't about the beer or the food. It's about a mural you want to take a picture in front of, or
exactly, you know. Yeah, something that's going to stand out and be memorable that they want to take a picture with. Because as soon as they do that, then they're tagging you in all of their social media, and then all those friends that you never knew and weren't part of your demographic, suddenly everybody's thinking about it or looking at it.
Yeah. And you never know when something like that, or an event you do, or something you host in your brewery, is going to go viral enough to attract more people. So that's why, you know, I think we have to be open-minded about the events we host in our space, to sort of kind of bring it back full circle, is that we, you know, that's why we let random groups do random things. That's why we don't censor who plays music here, or the art that we hang on our walls. It's, you gotta see where the world is these days and where it wants to take you.
Yep. And I, like you were saying earlier, I don't charge for anybody that wants to come in here and host an event, or if any of the nonprofits want to come in and do a fundraiser, whatever we got going on, I never charge. As long as like I don't have a big event that night already set up, I tell people it's absolutely free. Just come in here and please clean up after yourself, you know, and you get all those people in, and a lot of them, they only came because their friends invited them for whatever it is they're doing. It had nothing to do with you. But once they're in the door, they try your beer, they see the way your location is, and then they go out and they keep spreading that word for you. I think that's become much better than just social media on your own, because if people aren't already following you, they're not going to see anything you're posting anyways. So get those people in here that have their friends that have never been here, and that kind of spreads it out that way.
Yep.
I like that. What about when you have to make the hard decision of something that's just not working out? You know, somebody may have a great idea. They're, you know, they're going to say, oh, this is going to be great. And then, you know, it's crickets. Is it
one and done? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I let that go on for about 3 months. We had yoga in here. So it was an awesome yoga instructor and we didn't charge. And it was based around veterans and first responders, you know, to specific injuries or things that you normally can't do yoga because you got a bad back or bad shoulder. And she had several years of education specifically into how to do yoga around your injuries to help make things better or, you know, slowly grow you. But it was like 3 or 4 people per class. And we let it go on for like 3 months. And finally, I was like, I'm sorry, but we're just dragging a dead horse here. It never really took off. But I mean, I gave it a good, I'd say almost 4 months solid. And then I was like, okay, isn't. Yeah.
And that's, it's never an easy thing, right? Because it's somebody else's passion and you want it to work out, but it's also, you know, your overhead.
Yeah. At the end of the day, as I told her, I said, look, I'm super glad you did this. And I mean, I advertised the crap out of it, but it didn't work. And so, you know, I gave it a lot longer than I probably should have, but, you know, I felt bad for her and she was doing awesome. And the 3 people that came in, they all were people that needed it and they were great folks. But at the end of the day, it was like, you know, this is no longer, you know, it never has done anything, but I gave it as long as I could to hope that it would grow. But at one point you just have to cut it.
I stepped on somebody before. Brian or Greg, you were going to jump in, I think.
I was just saying, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to pay our bills, right? And then the 3 of us on here might be owners of breweries, but we also probably have a landlord. We have employees that, you know, we need to make sure their paycheck's cash and it's worth their time being here and that they're getting the gratuities that they expect. And, you know, I think once you start a brewery, you kind of, you want to do what you want to do and you want to have these events and you want to brew what you want to brew. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't let you keep the lights on, then at some point you have a responsibility beyond yourself to make those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I give Stephen a lot of credit for going 3 months with something. I think we would go maybe a month. You know, I'd like that mantra of just fail fast. You know, I'm willing to try anything, but you know, let's think it through. Let's do a good launch and then evaluate it a couple weeks later and really say, did we give this the attention and the runway it deserved? And if it was yes, and it didn't work out, then we changed direction. But others, maybe we'll feed it another month to see, and we'll tweak how we approach it. But as we were talking, there was another thing that we had tried that was really successful, and it was helpful for our business as well, in that we're a dog-friendly establishment, but not everybody who brings a dog in is very good with their dog. So there's a woman in our area who trains dogs to behave in breweries. So we hosted her class and people would come bring their dog and she would teach them how to walk a dog up to the bar, how the dog should behave at the bar while they're being served, how to respond to people who, when they say, can I pet your dog? And you don't want them to, right? So that was helpful for us because it helped the dogs that were coming in behave like we wanted them to.
That's awesome. Smart. What a cool idea.
Ironically just commented on the person who trained our brewery's dog's post the other day, being like, hey, you're looking for a space to do a training class. Why don't you use the brewery? And we sell t-shirts here with our logo on them that say, can I pet your dog? So you can borrow that, Greg. I'll get that one for free.
That's great.
Oh, nice.
It's our best selling piece of merch.
Awesome.
I will also point out that Brian has a onesie for a baby's first brewery tour.
Awesome.
Of which my daughter has one. That was her first
awesome
her first brewery in town. Greg, I wanted to go back to something that you were talking about earlier on events for beer releases. Mm-hmm. And that strikes me as the oldest of the old school in the craft world these days of, you know, hey, we're tapping our stout this Friday at noon, or, you know, it's IPA Saturday or whatever it is. And for a while, I think pre-COVID, there was a lot of excitement around it. And then 10,000 breweries in the country, right? It kind of becomes commonplace. How have you brought excitement to beer release events?
Yeah, I would agree with your sentiment that it's just another one of those noise announcements, because every brewery is announcing the new IPA, the new juicy this, the new coffee filled this, and the consumer's numb to that broadcast anymore. So ours really relies on telling the story of the charity rather than saying the story of the beer, right? So what we do is when we bring a charity in, we look at our production schedule and we let them pick what's coming up. And then we design our can around the charity. So we use their colors, we input their logo, maybe a QR code, and their story is on the can. And then we do a release to the press. And what's unique is when you do a beer for a charity and you do it every time, there's a reason to tell a story. And we've been featured in the media over 45 times because every time we do a beer release, there's something to talk about. And we've done substantial ones. We've done things for Honor Flight. We've done them for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We've done them for pet adoption, all different kinds of things. Now, we won't touch politics. Right. I'm not doing a Democrat or Republican beer. I'm not touching justice reform. I'm not touching religion. But nobody can get mad at getting some sport equipment for kids, for adopting some cats, or fixing some bikes and giving them away to city kids. Mm-hmm. So we use those types of events to bring people in. So, for example, we did one for Dress for Success, which is an organization where people donate women's clothing for people who can't necessarily afford it, but they have a job interview. So they can go to a place and get some nice clothing to go to a job interview. And what we do is we tie that to a clothing drive. So we reach out social media, we reach out to our mug club, and we say, hey, we're doing a beer launch. This is the organization. They could really use your clothes. And after the pandemic, right, you probably didn't wear 80% of the things in your closet.
Yep.
So let's donate them. And we had a massive donation of clothing. So that's kind of how we tie the success.
And
to
it got
the charity
people through the door as well.
Absolutely. They came in and we gave them a dollar off if you bring clothing, right? So donate some clothes, get discount on your beer, and let's have a party.
I like that. Stephen, go ahead.
Yes. I was just going to say, we just actually started working with Honor Flight ourselves. And we did a bunch of donations for, they're doing a charity fundraiser at a gala, I can't say that word, event. And I was just talking about that because that's funny. One of the ones we just started working with, what we do is we do the same thing. Anytime I'm working with one of the nonprofits, I bring them in here with some of their staff or their volunteers, and we brew a beer for them, put it up on tap, and we donate 50 cents of every glass directly to them. And that just hit me with a huge idea. How would you like to do a like cross country collab beer for Honor Flight?
Yeah, that's great. We actually did that for with Maui Beer Company. They did a beer called Kona to raise money for the Maui fire relief. So I think there were 1,000 breweries around the world.
Yeah, I remember that.
Participated in that. So we brewed it and we did it. And Honor Flight falls into that same category.
Yeah, no, I would love that. That would be fantastic.
I like that. You guys should.
Let's collab on it. We'll put it out to the world.
Yeah, definitely.
When that happens, let me know. So I want to, and those are great. It's a great charity, and it's certainly a really great organization. I'm wondering, and Stephen, I think it was your social media. I've been going through all of your pages over the last day or so before this conversation. Are you, Stephen, is it your brewery or is it Greg's brewery that's doing Easter welcome mats?
Yeah, that's us.
Okay, that's Stephen. Okay. So I just wanted to sort of talk about tying in holiday events, right? Because if we think about yoga, or we think about open mics, or we're thinking about all, you know, charities and everything, those can be evergreen. Those can happen really any time of year. Stephen, have you found that having events tied around a specific holiday that's not just, hey, come drink our stout on St. Patrick's Day, that those resonate with folks as well?
Yeah. So we do some other weird stuff. So on Thanksgiving and Christmas, we do a huge feast in here, absolutely free to anybody, because this is a big veteran area. And a lot of veterans or active duty, you know, they're away from family or they're all alone. And those are the two worst days for suicide. So we open up and we're open regular hours, and we do free food all day for anybody that wants to come in. We fed 52 on Thanksgiving and 68 on Christmas. And most of them were guys stuck in the barracks, you know, young soldiers that were away from their family, or older veterans that didn't have anywhere to go because so many places are closed. So we found that that's a huge thing. Like, we decorate the place, we do food and whatnot. And then usually we have, except for Thanksgiving, I have a special beer for like every major holiday. And so we'll come in here, like we do a pajama party for Christmas where everybody can come in their onesies or whatever and have fun. So we try to host, you know, events with those. And like, so for 4th of July and Veterans Day, I offer an absolutely free, it used to be bottles, but now that we're on cans, thank God, we offer a free can of beer, no questions asked. Walk in, show your ID, it's yours. You can turn around, walk out, no purchase necessary. Just our way of saying thank you to them. And a lot of those guys that come in do end up having a few drinks, or they come back because they know about this. And for the first couple of years when I was down at the VFW, obviously I couldn't do it there. So I was actually packing up a crap load of it in my backpack and riding my motorcycle around to anybody that messaged me that day that gave me their address. I would drive to their house and just give them a free beer for awesome. Just because, nice. You know?
Awesome.
I like that.
And to build on the holiday,
yeah, great.
Aspect
yeah.
of things, one of the things we've sort of adopted as an in-house approach is mental health. I've struggled with depression my whole life. And so very early on, we had a customer approach us who had unfortunately lost her brother-in-law to suicide. And she said, could we do a beer for mental health? So she connected us with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And they were at that time coming out with a campaign called #RealConvo. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially a toolkit that people could use post-pandemic to reach out to family and friends and check in on them, see how you're doing, and just have a real conversation. So we made this beer, and the week we released it, we had a customer come in who was a Mug Club member before we opened, and we could tell he was off. And he basically said he and his wife had decided to separate, and he was thinking of hurting himself. And so we sat him down and we had a real conversation with him. It's probably one of the most impactful conversations of my life. And we then opened up that recipe to every brewery in New York State for September, which is National Suicide Awareness Month. And several breweries took it up and they brewed it. And when we released it in that September, we had a woman walk in, ordered a pint, and you can probably hear the emotion in my voice.
Yeah.
We put the pint down, she leaned a picture against the glass and walked out. And
oh goodness.
Before she walked out, one of our staff asked her, she said, you know, can you tell us what that significance is? And she said, that was my nephew. And he had died 1 year earlier on that day. And we had multiple instances of that where people came in and told us those stories. So that's really the driving force behind what we do, is bring people together to have that conversation about topics that are scary to talk about.
And it really just shows that bringing people together for awareness for events, it doesn't always have to be, nor should it always be about the, you know, frivolity that I think a lot of people associate with beer.
But what's great about beer is it's the ultimate social beverage. Right. Yeah, it's used at weddings. It's at funerals. It's everywhere. Right. So it's a tool that we can use.
Yeah. And unlike, liquor or wine, it's anybody of any class. I get people that come in here that work at NASA, make $250,000 a year. And I got construction guys making $15 an hour, and they can sit side by side and enjoy the same thing and the same conversation together.
And find camaraderie.
Yes. Yeah, it's the great beer really is the great equalizer.
No, and I think that's one thing we've seen a ton since, you know, John, you mentioned the changes that New Jersey has allowed us to make with our tasting room and sort of the impetus behind us in these events is that now that we have a sit down bar, which, you know, a month ago we weren't allowed to have, or 2 months ago we weren't allowed to have, just the conversations that you see in the tasting room now, never mind the events, but the conversations where it's these group of one person traveling for work, or two people, or even three or four people. Now that we have the bar, it's just, you see people making new friends all the time, new customers all the time. And I think that's, you know, like I said, that's the glorious part about craft beer, and the brewery experience. And, you know, our gluten-free beer cans even say, you know, this, we brew this beer so that everyone can experience the camaraderie that craft beer brings. And I think that's true, whether it's an event or not, whether it's a sit-down bar or a charity event or anything like that. It's, you know, it's just sort of a, in a day and age where you only meet people typically in front of a computer at work, you know, I think we still provide that safe haven and that neighborhood gathering space, for everybody.
Well, you three have certainly, because I'm the person who sits at my desk all day these days, despite what people think my life really is. All three of you have inspired me to get back out to a local brewery for something fun aside from just pints, or something meaningful aside from just pints. So, my thanks to all three of you, Stephen, Brian, Greg, for being on the show and for sharing what's happening inside of your four walls and giving us a lot to think about in terms of outreach and events and the things that really matter. Thanks for being on the show this month.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
What are some events your small brewery has held with great success, and what are you looking forward to trying out? Tell us all about it by emailing us, nano@byo.com, or better yet, tag BYO on all of the various BYO social media channels. And I'll invite you to head over to byo.com/nanopodcast and subscribe to the newsletter, the magazine, and to catch up with great pro brewing content. New episodes of the show are released on the 15th of every month, so subscribe now and never miss a show when it comes out. And you can also do us a favor by leaving feedback on your podcast platform of choice, or by emailing nano@byo.com, or checking in with us on all of the various BYO social media channels. As always, thanks to this episode's sponsors. And you can get access to hundreds of hours of on-demand videos covering small craft brewery strategies with BYO's Nano Plus membership. Learn from craft beer experts, watching replays of past NanoCon seminars, plus a complete library of in-depth workshops. You'll also have full online access to all of BYO's digital content and an annual print magazine subscription. Check out byo.com/nanoplus for more details. I'm John Hall, and you can still find me weekly behind the microphone on the Drink Beer, Think Beer podcast from All About Beer. Find that where podcasts are found, and I hope you'll tune in. Our theme music was created by Scott McCampbell, and we thank him for that. And once again, be sure to check out byo.com/nanopodcast for all of your nano brewing needs. And for now, we wish you all the best for a small but successful brew day.